This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, I'm talking to Tan Sri Dr. Kamal Saleh, the chairman of the partially government-funded think tank, the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, otherwise known colloquially as MIER. Tan Sri, welcome to the show and thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. So obviously, you have returned to the fold at MIER because you were one of the founding executive directors way back in 1986.
Yes.
Why did you choose to return?
Well, I was thinking that maybe it's a good time to return, but also there's a need to rebuild MIER after 33 years. I was the founding director way back in 86, and I left in 94. But now with the new government and also with the need to plan for what the government has set out as a new policy or outline perspective plan called Shared Prosperity 2030, there's room for a lot of research that are quite interesting and exciting. I thought I can do something there.
It's interesting also because obviously you've written a lot of publications and research through the years, but one of the things that you wrote about was the politician as an academic. And that's interesting for me because you were actually the elected Member of Parliament for Wangsa Maju between 1996 to 1999. So you've seen both sides of the divide, economic as well as politics.
Yeah.
What insights can you give me?
Well, it gives you a different perspective when trying to do policy research as well as advising policymakers. But policy research itself is an advice is at a higher level, whereas when you are in politics at that level, meaning you are at the grassroots level, it is a completely different experience. Policy doesn't you see things happening on the ground, but to translate that into policy beyond the problem of clogged drains and water shortages. And, of course, the squatters at that time in Wangsa Maju was quite prevalent. You do then see the other side of what policy you used to recommend.
That's actually a very, very, very illuminating point you've just made, Tan Sri, because Malaysia, even as we stand right now, a year and a half into new Malaysia, we're struggling with policy versus practicality. And one of the big things right now is education. People say that we're not as competitive as we used to be, but we know at grassroots level it's much more complex and even much more everyday than that. What can you shed? Yeah. What light can you shed?
On education policy, obviously, we are in a state of, I wouldn't say crisis, but we do need to change. And both at the lower level, all the way up to the university level, and we need some kind of new ideas as to how to bring up the competitiveness of the economy, especially when new skills are required.
Conceptually, you and I agree on that. But to push that through, that's entirely politically unfeasible. You know that through your years as a politician.
Yeah, you have to convince a lot of people. And there are a lot of stakeholders and also a lot of blowback when you try to innovate. And the system doesn't quite absorb innovation as quickly as it can. But right-thinking people, educationists among many of them, are very concerned about the direction we are going in our education system,
so at
especially
policy,
the state of the national schools.
Absolutely. So at policy level, what hope does Malaysia have of basically furthering the education agenda?
I think we cannot give up hope. We have to keep on trying to make sure that we can align the education system to the needs of the forthcoming decade, which is highly competitive, highly uncertain, and of course with Industry 4.0 requiring new skills, and old jobs are no longer going to be there because of AI and communications and so on.
So on to MIER, Tan Sri, and your position on this, because as you say, you think that it needs to be addressed in terms of its position in society. And I mean, theoretically speaking, MIER is an independent and problem-oriented research body that focuses and offers advice to the government on macroeconomic development and future economic perspectives. So where does MIER stand today in this current world where there's a lot of think tanks, whether it's Khazanah Research or Ideas or even REFSA from the other side?
Yeah. Sure. I mean, there are new bodies. I mean, we started, when I started as a career, there was only one policy research center, and that was Center for Policy Research in USM. That was way back in 73. And now, when I started MIR, I was asked to start MIR, and there was only myself, MIR, and ISIS, and a few other political party think tanks. But now there's mushrooming. All the banks, all the stockhouses have their own research institutes or sections now. And of course, PNB and Kazana. Well, the world of ideas is very varied. And you need opinions from all kinds of people and stakeholders so that the right policy comes out at the end of that research. But it must be grounded. It cannot be just plucked from the air or policy making on the whim of a politician or minister. It has to be probably studied and advised and open up to various kinds of opinions.
Well, media companies know that good content is very expensive, even more so when it comes to high-level policy research. It's a very expensive undertaking. Most think tanks, in fact, almost all of them, without exception, operate on some kind of bursary or fund or sponsorship. In your case, you're partially funded by an annual grant from the government of Malaysia. Yeah, yeah. My question to you is, how independent can you therefore be?
From the very beginning, when I started it, the Board of Trustees has given me a mandate that it must be independent of government in our views. And our research must not be dictated by political expediency or needs. In the context of what we have been doing, we managed to keep a certain distance from the kind of day-to-day issues of politics and political leadership. But that independence is quite crucial. When I was starting, there was a suggestion that I take up a job in UUM, but I had to turn it down because I already was committed to MIR. So even though I said I can do both jobs, after all, MIR is just a research institute. So you are running a university. There are many research institutes you can run. So, but the board says, no, you cannot be affiliated with anybody else except MIR to maintain that independence.
Yeah, well, because BFM loves numbers and because it's such a competitive landscape for think tanks, my question to you is, Tan Sri, how much does it cost to operate MIR annually, and how much of that is covered by government funding?
Specifically, we have roughly about $5 million to run a proper research group. Government contributes about $1.5 million a year for the next 5 years to 2023. But we need to raise the other $2.5 million.
Okay. So in the 30-plus years that you've been in operations, Tan Sri, in fact, let's just say in the last 2 years, what has been some of the most groundbreaking and some of the most divisive policy recommendations that you made to the government?
Well, me personally, it's different from MIR. I just took over since April. But their last contribution has been, through the National Wish Council, the executive director then, Professor Zakaria, Dato' Professor Zakaria, sits on the National Wage Council. And one of the things that MIR did was to study the minimum wage issue, which was then introduced at the last government.
And was that well taken up by the government?
Well, the minimum wage was implemented.
But in terms of the quantum, even in philosophical terms, some people are divided by the whole concept of minimum wage because it deters people from entering the job market because of the minimum scale.
Minimum wage means that any employer has to meet that minimum wage. Of course, they can offer higher, and job seekers would expect to be more than the minimum wage. Minimum wage maybe is not quite near the living cost or living wage, and therefore people should be looking for something better, of course.
Okay.
They should.
Okay, so you're 4 months into the new role, I mean, albeit an existing role for you previously. What are your plans to reinvigorate the MIR?
Well, in the 3 months that we have done, we did two big things. One is to reorganize the research program. to be to align with the current needs, which is actually to define new economic policy going forward for the next 10 years. And the issue of growth and inequality has always been there. And we are developing some models to try and understand and also make some simulations of two different scenarios and so on. And at the same time, we also I set up an industrial research consultancy, which is a means to get income from our research consultancy. This is to conduct feasibility studies or business plans for different businesses that want to invest, or even for us to look for investors or promote the projects to investors. At the same time, we have been always serving state governments. We almost have covered over the 33 years. And my time was Johor and Perak, but subsequently Sabah, Sarawak were involved and so on. So we almost exhaust all, except the new, when I came in, Malacca state government is asking us to do a 2030 projection for them.
Well, I'm talking this morning to Tan Sri Dr. Kamal Saleh, the chairman of the partially government-funded think tank, the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. We're going to be coming back after this, Tan Sri. We're going to get your feel of the economic barometer, as well as some of the projects that you're doing, such as the third national car and a Hyperloop system, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Tan Sri Dr. Kamal Saleh, the chairman of the partially government-funded think tank, the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, or MIER, with me on the grill this morning. Now, obviously, you do a lot of research in terms of how the economy is doing, sentiment, consumer behaviour, business sentiment. What's, very quickly, Tan Sri, what's your feel of the economy right now?
Right now, we are almost like in a holding pattern, trying to maintain based on our existing fundamentals, try to keep around the 4.5, 4.6 kind of level. Still low by our standards. We need to jack that up. But the business sentiments are still on waiting and seeing kind of level. There's just slight improvement over the last quarter, but that is only just and still well below the benchmark for expectations, both consumer sentiments as well as BCI.
Well, so it's all about the future, isn't it? And yeah. Right now, the future doesn't look so bright because of the trade war, the issues there, moribund economic growth, and basically fractured sentiment where a currency devaluation is concerned, and currency wars. What do you think Malaysia what holds for Malaysia in 2020?
Well, that's a very interesting question. The China US trade war, we have done some analysis in MIER, shows basically has just a marginal effect on us in the short term, because still export to them. But long term, we may benefit a bit more, and therefore this link to looking towards China as under the BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative, and so on, provides some leeway or some opportunity to move forward. But the new andeas are now being bandied about related to the issue of inequality, how to reduce the disparities between the top 20 and the bottom 40, the issue of expanding the middle class, and of course the new poverty issues that still baffle us.
I'm talking this morning to Tan Sri Dr. Kamal Saleh, the chairman of the partially government-funded think tank, MIER. Now, earlier you talked about, we touched on education as a policy discussion, Tan Sri. We also talked about how right now removing or at least decreasing the gap between the poor and the rich is one of the big policy conundrums right now. But this also comes at a time when a lot of people are saying, and the voices are getting louder about the social contract, the new economic policy that has been in a way stultifying Malaysia's growth. Now, how do we square all this in the context of having Malaysia be more competitive on a regional basis, not even global, on a regional basis for the next, say, 10 years?
There are two parts there. One is the social contract, which is an understanding in political, social terms amongst the various groups in the country, ethnic or otherwise, that we can define to mean to, in order to provide that kind of political stability required, you know, for us to then implement various economic policies. But for a long time, politics have defined our economic policies. The NEP since 1970 is an example. And now things are becoming a bit more still problematic in many areas of affirmative action. But going forward, the issue of growth is quite fundamental, and economics must be put right in order to ensure that, you know, people have enough incomes and so on. And one of our policy issues is concerned with how to raise the wages level. The wage level at the moment as part of national income is only about 38, when a developed country is about 50 to 55.
So there's GDP,
Yeah, so there's still some leeway to for the growth. And this might involve, will certainly involve the foreign labor situation in the country, the productivity, and therefore the nature of investments that you make, technology deepening required, and so on.
Well, as a policymaker, you'll understand that this the foreign labor issue is a smaller issue than, for example, the more structural issue, which is education, because at the end of the day, salaries are linked to abilities and skills are directly linked to education that one gets.
Sure.
If we don't produce quality graduates, we will not get the salaries that we want. It's as simple as that, which then comes back to, again, education and structural transformation there, which then again goes back to its affirmative action and all that discussion. So as a policy discussant, Tan Sri, how does Malaysia constructively take this issue forward?
The question of skills is definitely an issue. And the government is thinking of TVET and STEM education and so on. But the issue is, as you say, structural. I mean, the way in which we do not empower educators to innovate, for instance. And there's a lot of central control and bureaucratization impacting on innovation tendencies. We need to innovate in many sectors, economic, business, and government even, and also the education sector. And this is what we are looking at in MIR.
Okay, so I guess in short, you don't have a solution there because not many policymakers in Malaysia do. But maybe one way forward could be having projects or industries where you can drag along the people of Malaysia kicking and screaming to the 21st century.
Definitely.
One of the things that you're doing, and this I guess partly addresses the 3.5 million ringgit operational OPEX gap that you get through funding. You want to become a crouching tiger research and development company, right?
Yeah,
and that's interesting because you're transforming MIR. And one of the things that you're doing is in the third national car sphere, this LNV automotive thing. Tell us about your role within this whole project and how you can add value to the third national car. In fact, should we even have a third national car?
Yeah, well, directly to that question, it does not matter whether we have a third national car or not. If there's some investor interested in an electric car as a future vehicle addressing the whole issue of environment and so on, a good, right-thinking investor might see an opportunity in this area. But in respect of Crouching Tiger, which is a research program, a strategy that we devise, basically the word tiger refers to not tiger in a sense of fifth tiger or tiger as South Korea and so on, although we want to get there and tiger. But tiger also stands for technology-based industrialization for growth and economic reform. So the acronym becomes TIGER.
So Malaysia loves acronyms, sometimes to no avail. But really, I mean, from a commercial perspective, there might be money chasing ideas, but ideas need commercial viability.
Sure.
Is there a commercial market for this?
There's, besides the electric car, and there is a market, the market is global, and there are, of course, a lot of competitors, so you just have to compete. But we also are looking into 5G. If we can roll out nationally 5G, that will give us a good platform to make a leapfrog in terms of implications of AI, robotics, and manufacturing 4.0 and so on. The other includes how to change the logistic structure of the country and the Hyperloop, high-speed rail for freight. It was the one of the areas that we are studying. And there are investors interested and we are being funded for that purpose.
Well, that's the thing, see, because MIR has signed, I mean, a whole bunch of MOUs. And these are big ideas you're chasing, electric vehicles, solid-state, the hydrogen, agrobotics, biojet fuels, Hyperloops. And Hyperloops by itself in California, which Elon Musk is discussing just to connect two parts of California, that's a $35 to $40 billion, not ringgit, undertaking.
Hyperloop is only one of those ideas of hyperspeed rail. China already has got it through its maglev technology, and they are reaching up to 1,000 kilometers per hour already.
So what is MIR's role in this?
We are doing the study, the feasibility to see what are the impact as well, how much will it cost, and is that sustainable by both private or public if there's any and so on.
So to include some of the other MOUs, High Value Farming, Islamic Science Museum, Future Skills for Shared Prosperity, collaboration with FedTech USA, ASEAN Innovation Hub, my breath is running out, but in terms of priority and in terms of low-hanging fruit,
there are no low-hanging fruits. If they had been there, somebody would have plucked it.
Okay,
these are long-term studies, but there are already investors who are interested, and that's why we sign so many MOUs. There are people who come to us and say, can you do this, or try to understand the economy and where are the possibilities to invest and so on.
Okay, so from your position as chair of MIA, which is going to get the market soonest?
I think like even the electric car, you cannot get to market at least for another year, or 1 year or 2 years down the road, maybe even 5 years. Most of these are basic projects. Some of them are, and we have got a few of those that we have been engaged in as consultants, like, for instance, the Kulim International Airport project, the Tanjung Agas oil and gas hub, and also Pulau Keri project for quite a lot of mixed development, and a third port, the so-called South Port. And so a few of these things, these are ongoing. It is part of the structural transformation going through, but the policy needs to guide these, provide the right incentives in terms of skills, provide the extra training needed, maybe even targeted training. This is the only way you can cross that gap where there's a skills gap. You need to target skill development.
That's right.
You can. We are going to devise a program for the graduate unemployment, for graduate unemployed. Give them some training, some support, change their education, with new skills and so on.
Yeah, so if policy can't shine the light, then maybe private industry can. But what is a little bit more ominous is the fact that there's a company called Anchor Corporation Syndrome Berhad as the sole representative of investors and funders from overseas to fund government-approved projects. Who is Anchor?
Anchor is a company, it's a private company. It is just a consultancy, basically.
So should they be given sole status?
No. It doesn't give you sole status. We were approached by possible funders from overseas to say, can you be our consultant? I said, where to channel the funds? So basically that gives us... We got four MOUs, maybe five, that are in fact funders who want to sort of understand what's going on in the economy, where is the direction, what are the government policies, how are they going to move, and so on, and understand our factors like, as you say, skills.
Okay, so very quickly, we've got 2 minutes left, Tantri. LNV Automotive, actually. LNV Automotive. I hired you guys, right, MIR, to conduct feasibility studies on the third national car. And basically, it must be electric in nature, it must be affordable in nature. What viewpoints can you give us on this particular project?
It's too early to say much. LNV is a special purpose vehicle where the investor has expressed interest and even allocated the funds for it. We are doing we have gone beyond pre-feasibility and feasibility. We are now building a business plan for them, and this will be one of the first to be probably launched.
It's fascinating what you're doing, Tantri, and I do actually wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Especially since you're the founding executive director at MIR. So good luck and all the best with all the business plans, plural, not singular.
Thank you.
I was talking to Tantri Dr. Kamal Saleh, the chairman of the government-funded, partially government-funded think tank, the Malaysian Institute for Economic Research, or MIR, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.